Patrick McGrath grew up in a house on a hill 50 yards from the largest hospital for the criminally insane in England. His father ran the hospital and also saw patients on the grounds. McGrath worked at mental institutions for a while himself, but left that pursuit to become a writer. What he writes is horror fiction. He says he's interested in how the mind tends to deceive itself. His new collection of short stories is called Blood and Water and Other Tales. When I spoke with him, I asked him to read the opening paragraph from his story, The Angel.
You know the Bowery, I presume. It was on the Bowery that I first caught a glimpse of Harry Tallboys. I was a writer in those days, and I lived in a five-story walk-up by the men's shelter. I didn't realize at the time that Harry Tallboys lived in the same building, though of course I was familiar with the powerful smell of incense that contaminated the lower floors. It was high summer when I met him, high summer in Manhattan, when liquid heat settles on the body of the city like an incubus, and one's whole activity devolves to a languid commerce of flesh and fluids, the ingestion and excretion of the one by the other, and all sane organisms quite simply estivate. I was certainly estivating. I rose late in the day, and after certain minimal ritualistic gestures of the writerly kind, made my way to the liquor store. It was on one of these errands, on a garbage-strewn and urine-pungent sidewalk, beneath a blazing sun and slimed in my own sweat, that I first encountered Harry Tallboys.
Yeah, you know, one of the reasons why I asked you to read that paragraph is because you get the sense of heat and of everything putrefying and oozing, and I think yes. that really is kind of follows throughout your stories.
I think in horror stories you do get a lot of rot, or in my horror stories there's a lot of rot.
Any reason for that?
I think that all horror stories tend to be obsessed with decay in one form or another. Horror stories prefer to be set in ruins rather than in sound structures. They prefer to deal with the madness of a crumbling mind rather than, with crystal clear sanity. They prefer shadows to daylight. And one particular instance of that sort of decay is in the realm of the biological.
Now, I think your writing has a certain Victorian sensibility to it. Even the beginning of the paragraph that you just read, you know the Bowery, I presume.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you rooted in that period in some way?
I don't know. I suppose, in the sense that distance always lends enchantment to the view, that there is a sort of charm to old and arcane forms. And in linguistic terms, or in literary terms, I find that those sorts of pre-modern forms of writing are simply very attractive to me. Those rather ponderous and pompous and long sentences full of semicolons and so on. I just delight in them.
Victorian times leads us to Freud, which I think leads us to your father. Now, your father was the superintendent of the Broadmoor Lunatic Asylum in England. Would you explain what the asylum was?
Well, it's not an asylum as such, because this is, in fact, Victorian terminology, and my father spent most of his career fighting against that particular terminology. It's a mental hospital. And this is the largest maximum security mental hospital in England, and it's where what are now termed the mentally ill offenders are sent. And these are men and women who have, while in a state of psychosis, have committed some particularly fiendish offence that demands that they be in maximum security for the protection of themselves and the protection of the public.
And what was your father's job?
My father administrated the hospital and also had a patient caseload of his own. So essentially, he ran the hospital. My father was eager that we should come to understand mental illness as simply one other form of illness, so that you know, his own family, at least, would not suffer from the sort of lurid illusions about insanity that were elsewhere in the society.
Well, that's nice, but look at the kind of imagination you ended up with.
Yes, I know. I know, something went wrong, didn't it? I tried for a long time to be a socially useful citizen, and it didn't work. It wouldn't take.
In your book, there are two stories in which there are pickled hands and two stories in which there are severed hands that take on lives of their own. Do you have something about hands?
Well, it's not so much that I have something about hands, but that this whole there is a strain within horror fiction of severed hands, and I was curious as to what it was all about, and was reading actually a biography of Malcolm Lowry, and in this biography, Lowry is told that being obsessed with severed hands is related to masturbation guilt. And when I read that, I thought, aha. And that's when I wrote a story called Hand of a Wanker, which, you know, explains that this is what severed hands are all about.
Now, there's another severed hand story that I'm going to ask you to read an excerpt of. This is from a story called Hand of the Raj. And it's a story about a woman whose fiancé suddenly sprouts a hand growing out of the top of his head.
Yes.
And the hand strangles the man. The woman comes in, finds her husband dead, strangled by this hand. She lies down next to her husband's corpse. Mm. And then would you read from there?
How long she lay there, as the shadows gathered about her and the insects began their shrill and rasping chorus in the dusk, she would never know. But suddenly she became aware that her hair was being very gently stroked. "Cecil," she murmured, "Cecil, are you still with me?" And in a way he was, for the dark hand growing out of his head had begun to softly caress Lucy's hair, and such was the lightness, the delicacy of its touch, that the demented girl did not recoil in horror, but remained sobbing on the corpse as the hand soothed her and calmed her and brought her slowly to a state of passive languor. And when it gently touched her neck, she still did not resist, did not leap back in disgust, but allowed the fingers to melt her pain to pleasure and revive the longings that had first been spawned by the hot sun of Suez. And once again Lucy Heppelwhite was filmed with perspiration, and she moaned in the shadows of the body of her lover.
What were you thinking about when you wrote that?
I was just thinking, you know, what a gruesomely neat idea this is, that you know, that a man could be dead, but part of his body could remain alive, and that his fiancée could actually be seduced by this part of his body that still retained life somehow. I thought, this is the most bizarre idea I've ever had, and I was enjoying myself when I wrote that.
Since you're so interested in the gruesome, what do you do when you encounter something gruesome in real life? For instance, say you encounter a dead rat in which a lot of insects are feeding.
Mm.
Are you going to stare at it and really look at it so that you could describe it really accurately in your next story? Or will you avert your eyes and try to forget what you'd seen?
The first. I'll stare at it. I mean, I think it's interesting. Don't you? Wouldn't you?
Well, I'll tell you, I've actually been in this situation a lot lately, because there's all these cats that live on my block, and they're constantly bringing me offerings. So, there's always, like, dead birds and mice and stuff outside my house, and part of me is really drawn to it, and part of me is just absolutely horrified, and I don't even want to look at it or deal with it. So, I don't know, I have this kind of compulsive look, don't look.
Yes. Yes, I think maybe that's why we like horror fiction, if we like it. It's because we are caught with a sort of fascination and repulsion simultaneously, and the horror writer probably has to exploit that that attraction, make it stronger so that you can enjoy your own repulsion while, you know, completely fulfilling your desire to look.
Patrick McGrath, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Oh, thank you very much.
Patrick McGrath's collection of short stories, Blood and Water and Other Tales, is published by Poseidon Press. This is Fresh Air.